This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I am Ira Flatow. A little bit later in the hour, call in your composting and cold weather gardening questions. We'll be talking about gardening. But first, there is some good news about the economic bailout bill last week, and it has to do with your health insurance, because tacked on to it was a provision now signed into law that requires additional coverage for mental health treatments. So treatments for drug or alcohol addiction, bipolar, schizophrenia, or depression can all be covered by to the same extent as heart disease or a broken bone. It is being hailed as a landmark law by supporters who have spent over a dozen years trying to get it passed. But what about insurance companies? Might they raise insurance premiums, forcing businesses to foot the bill, or perhaps your own if you're paying for private insurance? And will patients really have the access they need to mental health treatment once and for all? Joining me now to talk about the bill and those questions is my guest, William C. Moyers, Vice President of External Affairs for the Hazelden Foundation and author of Broken, My Story of Addiction and Redemption. Welcome to the program, Mr. Moyers.
Thank you, Ira, for having me on this afternoon.
You're welcome. Let's talk about the highlights of the bill. Give me a couple of the highlights that have impressed you.
Well, the biggest highlight, Ira, is that finally, for the first time, the Congress of the United States and the President recognized that addiction to alcohol and other drugs, and that illnesses such as bipolar disorder and eating disorders, as you mentioned, depression, are chronic diseases that deserve and need to be treated on par with other chronic illnesses. It's taken a lot of hard work and effort over many, many decades, actually, to finally get policymakers to recognize not just that addiction is a disease and a chronic disease, but that it's treatable and that treatment does work. So I'd say that the biggest impact of this legislation is to help remove the stigma by removing obstacles that oftentimes get in the way of people accessing a treatment for these illnesses through their private health care insurance.
So, for example, if I go to the doctor, my insurance company will not be allowed to pay me one level of a copay for mental health and another for a broken bone or something like that.
That's essentially correct in the sense that this legislation does not require insurance companies to cover addiction or mental illness. If they were covering it, then they are required to cover it on par or equally with a broken bone or diabetes or hypertension or asthma. So the bill is really not an end-all. I mean, it's just a major step in the right direction towards shining a bright light into what's been a dark corner of chronic disease, and that's addiction and mental illness.
And what size businesses are we talking about here?
Well, generally any business over 50 employees would be required to cover it if they already cover it. It's not a mandate. There were opponents to the legislation over the years that often said that any mandate from Congress is not a good one, especially one like this, but that's not true. It's only, again, companies that are more than 50 employees and are already covering addictions treatment. And the interesting part about it, Ira, is that oftentimes the argument had been made in the past when we had mental health parity first passed in 1996, legislation that excluded addiction. The argument was made back then that if Congress was to pass legislation, it would probably lead insurance carriers to drop coverage. But the reality is that all these years later, mental illness has been covered in plans that really saw the value of treating employees who have depression or other illnesses. So I suspect that we may see a couple of short blips on the screen in terms of decreases in coverage, but over the long run, we'll see a greater expansion of those coverages.
So do you think that companies that don't cover mental illness might add it on now?
Well, you know, there's always the troubling reality of today's world economically, and who knows what's going to happen with unemployment and health care reform that's coming in 2009, no matter whom we elect as president. There are a lot of sort of intangibles, if you will, but my sense, Ira, is that everybody from the U.S. Chamber of Commerce to the Better Business Bureau and Fortune 500 companies and small mom-and-pop hardware stores have all recognized the reality that addiction and mental illness don't discriminate, that they affect the corner office just like they affect the assembly line, and that it's best to treat these illnesses so that they can retain their employees, so that the workplace is a safer place. and so that the home front is a safer place as well. So I think by and large, we've helped to shine, as I said earlier, a bright light into this dark corner of misunderstanding, and helped people to understand that, you know, these are illnesses that can be treated and that treatment works and that people who get treatment are all the better for it, and so is the community.
Here's a question from Paxis and Second Life, and the question is, will insurers now be able to refuse your application if you have a family history of mental illness?
Well, I don't think I know the question, the answer to that. Yeah. That's a good question. I mean, there are certainly pre-existing conditions that oftentimes help to decide who gets coverage and who doesn't for any number of illnesses. I suppose that case could be made. But, you know, the reality is I'm a recovering addict and alcoholic. I have 14 years of continuous sobriety, and I'm very open and honest about my addiction to those mood and mind-altering substances and to my long-term recovery, which came because I got treatment. I think people who are willing to share that with their employers, willing to share that with their doctors and their communities, actually are in a healthy space of mind, body, and spirit. And I would think that that would be a good thing to be able to talk about that, not a negative.
1-800-989-8255, talking with William C. Moyers, Vice President of External Affairs for the very famous Hazelden Foundation. He's also author of Broken, My Story of Addiction and Redemption. Do you think that addiction treatment is becoming a bipartisan issue now?
Well, there's no question about it, Ira. Addiction is a bipartisan disease, and the solution demands a bipartisan approach. For many, many years, Republicans thought that Democrats were the addicted ones, and Democrats thought it was the Republicans who needed treatment. But the reality is that this is an illness that has reached across both aisles of Congress. The president signed the bill into law. There were a lot of members of both parties and both houses who supported it. And I'll tell you, we have a terrible problem in this country with a criminal justice system and a war on drugs that's not that's trying to deal with the problem by locking people up and holding them accountable only in a criminal justice kind of way. And I think taxpayers, Republicans, and Democrats are all waking up to the reality that we need a new approach. And among the many tools in this new approach is one that holds people accountable by getting them treatment. So this is a cost-saving step by Congress.
You know, many times Congress people change their minds when it hits their own home. Particular examples might be in embryonic stem cell research, where you had conservative people in Congress switching their votes or coming out in favor of it because they knew people who might need the technology that comes out of it. Or they had relatives who might benefit from the research that might come out of it. So it was a very personal thing to them. Did you find that in winning over converts in this case, too?
Yes, Ira. I have found in my own visits to Capitol Hill, through my work at Hazelden, and also with my colleagues in the field, Faces and Voices of Recovery, and the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill, and other organizations that have been pushing this legislation, I discovered that addiction is the chronic illness that thrives in the shadows of private shame and public misunderstanding. And when I stand up and speak out, and when others stand up and speak out and share their own experiences, we find Republicans and Democrats alike, people from the rural lands and people from the inner city, all discovering that they too can talk about it. And I will say that I believe there has been an emergence in this country, in the media, in Washington, and elsewhere, in terms of talking about addiction and mental illness as treatable illnesses.
So what is the next step? Would a logical next step be to get more coverage by health insurance companies?
Sure. I mean, it would be wonderful if it's more than that, though, Ira. Mm-hmm. Yes, we want insurance companies to step up to the plate as they will now and do their part. But I think the bigger challenges, there are two of them quickly. One of them is, how do we include addiction and mental illnesses in the larger conversation about health care reform, which is surely coming in this country in 2009 and certainly in 2010? We need to make sure that those illnesses are at the table and not on the table. And secondly, I think we need to use this as an opportunity to have a national dialogue about how we change the war on drugs so that we more equitably balance intervention and tough law enforcement with prevention, research, and treatment, in part because the saddest thing about this is, Ira, there are still 20 to 25 million people in this country, so say the federal government, 20 to 25 million people who need treatment, but only 25% of them ever get it, either through their private insurance or in a public pay system. There's too much of a gap between the need and the resources.
Mm-hmm. So you feel this could be a good bipartisan campaign issue?
Well, it's a huge step in the right direction. And in fact, both candidates, Senator McCain and Senator Obama, have talked very passionately about their own familial experiences with alcoholism and drug addiction. And Senator McCain has talked about his father and his struggles with addiction. And, of course, Senator Obama has talked about his own experimentation as a younger man and also some of the impact that those substances have had in his family. So I think this country is a lot further along now than we were even just a couple of weeks ago, but we have a long way to go.
One last question about the specifics of the law. Does the new law put a cap on the number of visits, you know, like it used to be for treatments?
Well, it's not a carte blanche, certainly not, and it shouldn't be. Healthcare reform needs to be conscious, or healthcare needs to be conscious of controlling costs even while offering good treatments. The bottom line with the bill is that it says that co-pays and deductibles and annual and lifetime caps on addiction and mental health benefits will be the same as those on medical and surgical benefits. In other words, no more and no less. And I think that's the key. The discrimination against mental illness and addiction have been ended because of this legislation.
And when does it take effect?
It takes effect 1 year from when Congress voted on it, which I believe was October the 3rd. So we've got about a year. Nobody get worried yet. We've got a year to figure out exactly what it means and how it's going to work. But for all intents and purposes, it'll probably be early 2010 before all insurance plans are on board and all consumers understand their rights as well as their needs.
William, I want to thank you very much for taking time to be with us.
Thanks for having me on, Ira.
You're welcome. William C. Moyers is the Vice President of External Affairs for the Hazelden Foundation, author of Broken, My Story of Addiction and Redemption. That's a book he's written recently. We're going to take a short break and come back and switch gears and talk to you about gardening. Yeah, your garden's looking a little brown, right? It's the end of the summer. Things are cooling down a little bit. It doesn't mean you have to stop gardening. You can actually start working on compost and start working on that compost, rich compost, right there in a bucket in your kitchen using worms. But you didn't know that. You knew the worms were good for your soil. Now you can help them really make great soil. We'll tell you how to do that. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News.